Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear about Twin Cities Public Television's upcoming special called Going to War, and we'll hear the story of a former homeless veteran who's now helping other homeless veterans. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Students across Minnesota have started their spring semester of college. A good handful of them are members of the Minnesota National Guard who are using state and federal assistance as well as the GI Bill to pay for their higher education. Of the three, the Minnesota State Tuition Reimbursement is something unique, exclusively for members of the Minnesota National Guard. It allows our soldiers and airmen in good standing with their unit to be reimbursed up to 100% of the undergraduate rate of the University of Minnesota Twin City campus. The state tuition program is a fantastic benefit for our soldiers and airmen, as well as the Minnesota National Guard. About 20% of our current members are in college. I encourage highly motivated listeners interested in learning about how to obtain college tuition reimbursement to check into the Minnesota National Guard. To get connected with a recruiter in your community, visit online or call 1-800-GO-GUARD.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. TPT National Productions is the national production division of the Twin Cities Public Television, the PBS affiliates for Minneapolis-St. Paul. For over 30 years, has been a prominent producer for the national public television system, creating distinctive documentaries, series, websites, and educational initiatives that garnered nearly every major broadcast award. And today we've got two people joining us to talk about a new production that the TPC is preparing. First, it's Joanna Baldwin Mallory, and secondly, Carl Marlantes. Joanna and Carl, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Joanna, can you tell us a little bit about your position with the Twin Cities Public Television and a little bit about Going to War? What's this all about?
Sure, and it'll tee up a great conversation with Carl as well, since he is really our intellectual guide on this new project. I came to TPT about 3 years ago as an executive producer, and while I concentrate mostly on science and bioscience, a particular personal interest, kind of profound interest to me, has been the war experience that our veterans have gone through. And this is derived in part because although I quit saying that I'm not a veteran, nor do I play one on TV, I do have very deep, kind of significant roots related to that experience. My husband was a captain of Special Forces in Vietnam. During our 15-year marriage, I got to know a lot about the experience of not only participating in the theater of war, but also coming home, and both the pleasures and the challenges of coming home. That being said, it was, Carl, when was it? It was in 2011, I believe. You published two books, one, Marlantes, your novel about Matterhorn, and secondly, What It Is Like to Go to War, which came out almost immediately on the heels of that novel, which was your personal reminiscence and larger thinking about the war experience from your point of view, and also thinking larger, the universal point of view.
Well, let's take this opportunity to meet Carl. Carl Marlantes. Yes. Carl, you were in the Marine Corps in Vietnam?
That's right. I was a platoon commander in a rifle company, and we were north of Khe Sanh, right where the Laotian border meets the DMZ, so we were up high in the mountains.
And you have written two books, I understand, and the one that that Joanna's working on for this special called Going to War is titled What Is It Like to Go to War? What prompted you to share your Vietnam experiences in that book?
Well, you know, there were a couple things. One of them is that when I came home, there was a particular incident. I was still in uniform, still in the Marine Corps, but I was at the Pentagon, and I had to go to the White House with some papers, and as I was right in front of the White House, a group of students were shouting at me from across the street and flipping me the bird and waving North Vietnamese flags. And I remember just being stunned and realizing that, you know, if I even tried to walk across the street, it would just be bedlam. And I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't tell them who I was. I couldn't tell them our experience, you know. And like I said, they were calling us baby killers, and most of the guys in my company were younger than those students. And it was this feeling of frustration that I just couldn't walk across the street. So my first book, the novel, Matterhorn, was more or less trying to just explain our story. And that same kind of motivation of just trying to communicate to people the experience, I thought, well, I couldn't sell Matterhorn, so I thought I'd write a nonfiction and go into detail what it was like. And it was also motivated by the fact that I had, you know, trouble with post-traumatic stress, and I had to try and figure out a lot of things about what happened to me in the war, killing, and how do I feel about it. And one particular night, I was driving down Interstate 5, and the eyes of a young Vietnamese soldier that I killed appeared in the windshield. It was in the early 90s, and I realized that I needed to deal with it. So it was just my own psychology, and I thought, well, if I can think it through and maybe get it down on paper and maybe get it published, somebody else would relate to it, and the other audience was, if there's any young person who is thinking of making the military as a career, read this book and think about it seriously. It's not a romantic ideal, and I'm no pacifist, and I'm a proud Marine, and I think the military is an honorable profession, but I just don't want any romantics going into it with the wrong idea.
We're speaking with Carl Marlantis and Joanna Baldwin Mallory from Twin Cities Public Television on the project Going to War on Minnesota Military Radio. And Carl, it looks like there was a big gap in your life between the time you came back from Vietnam and when you started writing these books.
Well, actually, there was a big gap between when they got published. I actually wrote Matterhorn in the 70s. And no one would touch it. I couldn't get a person to even read it. And so it took 35 years to get it published. And it got published in 2010 by Grove Atlantic. And, of course, I'd already written the other book, and so that came out in 2011, the year right afterwards. So that, it wasn't me waiting to write it. It was just that the public wasn't, you know, or at least I should say the people in New York didn't think the public was ready to read or deal with Vietnam. And I think in truth, as a culture, we are just now really starting to deal with that war.
Carl, I understand that in your book, and once again it's called What Is It Like to Go to War, you deal with being in Vietnam and being in war in reality and fairly blunt terms.
Yeah, I tried to be as honest as possible, and believe me, I found even that hard. I mean, there'd be sometimes I'd be writing, and I'd go like, Carl, you're not telling the truth, because there were things I just wanted to avoid, and I'd have to stop myself, walk around, go outside, get my head together, and come back in and go back at it. It was a hard thing to do, personally, but it was very worthwhile. I have this concept, a friend of mine named Joe Bobro said, Carl, you're turning ghosts into ancestors, and ghosts haunt us. They're the unconscious things in our minds. Getting it out in front of me, getting it on paper, I could turn these ghosts into ancestors. They're still part of my life. They are completely part of my identity, but they're no longer haunting me. And there's many other ways to do this besides writing. I mean, there's poetry, art, there's just talking to your friends. I mean, there's lots of ways to get ghosts into ancestors, but that's really what I was doing.
Carl, we've got about a minute left before we have to take a short break, but I'm sure you've noticed, as I have in the last 40 years, that society is doing a whole lot more to take care of our veterans, take care of our service members deployed, take care of their families. There's so many programs here today that weren't there when you and I came back from Vietnam. It's pretty encouraging, isn't it?
No, it's changed enormously. I think that if there's one thing that the Vietnam veterans can be proud about is that people took a look at what happened to us and they said, we're not going to do this again. And it's very gratifying. The country has changed. It's grown up. I think it's just being more grown up.
Carl and Joanna, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk to Joanna a little bit more about how you're going to bring this story, pull it together for your project called Going to War. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back with more from Joanna Baldwin-Mallory and Carl Marlantis. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting today with Carl Marlantis and Joanna Baldwin-Mallory about an upcoming Twin Cities Public Television project called Going to War, which is based upon Carl's book, What Is It Like to Go to War? And Joanna, I want to talk a little bit about this project. This whole book, it looks like it's based on the concept of that we take our civilians, turn them into soldiers. Soldiers go off to war, turn into warriors, and then when they come home, you have to turn those warriors back into citizens again. Sounds like a three-act play.
And in point of fact, this is a two-hour film, which will have a primetime PBS broadcast when we're ready for air. And in fact, it is a three-act film that follows very naturally on the trajectory of citizens who sign up and go to boot camp, learn to become soldiers, go into, in some cases, the theater of war, the combat zone, and then come back to civilian life and all of the full spectrum of the positives and the challenges of that experience over time. And our three acts in this two-hour show really follow that. Our first act is we focus on boot camp. And we interweave the real-life stories of new recruits in boot camp as they're facing what sometimes feels like unbelievable odds in becoming soldiers and, in Carl's case, becoming a Marine. And the new experiences and the transformation of their own personal identities in that process.
Joanna, I think Carl would tell you, and I would tell you, that anybody that's been in the service, the first day in boot camp really is eye-opening.
Yeah. Carl, do you agree?
Totally. I mean, I think that I'll never forget the shock of stepping off of the bus and running to Yellow Footprints. And from then on, it's moving you from basically being self-oriented to being other-oriented, and that's a shock for any young person.
So that should be that first act of your play should be interesting for anyone that hasn't served in the military to see that shocking change that happens in boot camp.
Right, and one of the points that Carl makes in his book, and that we make in the that we also make in the first act of this PBS show is, you know, when you don't do well, you are not necessarily held, punished. It's your comrades that can be punished. So it's a real eye-opening situation when, if you don't do well, your teammates get punished. And I think that changes that fundamental I first to we first.
And it teaches us all how to follow orders so that when we do go off to war, we're ready.
That's right. That's right.
And yet, for that act too, when you do get into a war zone, I don't know about you, Carl, but I didn't know what I was getting into until I arrived.
There's really no way you can actually prepare somebody totally for the experience. All you can do is kind of prepare them that something's going to happen and that there's training that's going to help you get through it. But we'll never be able to prepare somebody totally for war. That's a personal transformation that happens in the crucible combat.
So, Joanna, I think you're going to have an interesting time with that, too, because it's another eye-opening shock to all of a sudden land in a place like South Vietnam.
Oh, exactly. I just have it in front of me. Just a couple of lines here that Carl wrote. This was a couple of years ago when we were developing this project. It was right at the end of boot camp, and he says, "When I completed boot camp, I was a well-trained Marine. I could fight. back at boot camp, the one that we'll be following in the show, and surrounded by the newly trained and now capable recruits we've come to know in this show so well. Marlantis reflects, then they sent me to Vietnam, and I had no idea what the hell I was in for. So he was, you know, the epitome of trained, and then he and others entered the complete chaotic landscape of war. And, Carl, you were there for a full tour, correct?
Right.
And you were in
months.
The
I think
kind of
what
the
I'd
Highland.
Like to say there is that is, I was prepared technically, but psychologically and spiritually, that's your own work.
And all of a sudden you're in a place where other people are shooting at you, and if you don't shoot back and take care of yourself, bad things are going to happen.
Absolutely. And then when you do kill somebody, you have to deal with it.
And that gets you to the act number three, Joanna, when we bring our warriors home and they've had to live with everything they've seen and done and experienced and survivor's guilt and lost friends and then come home and try to blend back into society, that can be a problem.
And that's a society that doesn't necessarily really understand what the not only the military experience is in very positive ways, that sense of the values and the empowerment and the new skills our veterans come home with that are kind of not really understood in the workaday world necessarily. But also the kind of isolation that veterans can face when people don't really understand what the combat experience was, again, in all of its challenging forms, too, the potential of sorrow and guilt and having lost friends, having had to kill. And there has often been almost a compact between veterans and their communities and society at large in terms of a silence around that experience. And I think people like Carl, and particularly in his book, really shatters that compact and tries to tell us that until you're able to communicate your experiences, civilians won't understand and they won't have nearly the sense of the value of that experience and the true cost of that experience.
We're speaking with Joanna Baldwin-Mallory and Carl Marlantis about the Twin Cities Public Television project called Going to War, which is based on Carl's book, What Is It Like to Go to War, on Minnesota Military Radio. Carl, is there a special theme that you're trying to weave into this project?
Well, I think the one thing that we're focused on is that it's a universal experience. It's just not what happens in the United States of America. This experience, being prepared for, being there, and trying to reintegrate is something that cultures, societies have dealt with for millennium, and some have done it more successfully than others. And so we're not just focused on the United States. We're looking at a lot of other ways that humanity has dealt with this particular issue, and I think that's a broad approach that's not been done.
And I think what you're trying to say there, as we said before, when we got trained and then we went to a war zone, and when we got there, we didn't really know what to do. But within a very short period of time, we transitioned to a place where we were doing our job and we understood what to do. And that's gone on forever, hasn't it?
Absolutely. That is a universal human experience. And I think it's one that, you know, we need to sort of look at. It's been with us for, you know, ever since we've been on the planet.
Joanna, we just got about a minute and a half left. Can you tell us a little bit more about this project and when you're projected to complete it and
yes,
when we might see it?
We have great support from both PBS and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, both in terms of a prime time slot in the national schedule and also significant financial support. We are hoping to fill the gap of our budget because, you know, in public media, we spend part of our time producing and part of our time seeking the sponsorship to make the project happen. We're hoping to complete our funding this first quarter of this year, go into production, and hopefully bring this program to air in the spring of 2017.
Joanna, good luck with it, and please keep us up to date so that we can tell our listeners when they can see that show next year. And Carl, your book, What Is It Like to Go to War, where is it available?
Well, you can get it at independent bookstores, the usual places, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. It's very easy. It's out there.
Carl Marlantis, and the book is What Is It Like to Go to War? We want to wish you both luck with this project, Going to War, based on that book, and want to thank you both for calling in and sharing some this information with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. That was Joanna Baldwin Mallory from Twin Cities Public Television and Carl Marlantis. And once again, his book is What Is It Like to Go to War? Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is General Mills. The Veterans Network has become the largest employee network at General Mills with over 760 members. The efforts of this network are focused on being an employer of choice for military veterans. They have set goals to attract, retain, and serve veterans, their families, and the military community. The Veterans Network recently hosted a Veterans Leadership Day. This event provided the opportunity for more than 50 veteran employees to attend leadership training. General Mills leaders have been bringing companies and state agencies together to form the Patriots Network. This group is working to establish a program to assist veterans in achieving their career goals. General Mills has been a Yellow Ribbon company since November of 2012 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families.
Ready, aim, fire! Ready, aim, fire!
Across Minnesota this past year, hundreds of veterans were honored in their final rites by an American Legion Honor Guard. We take care of our comrades to the end. But the Legion does so much more in Minnesota, from Boys and Girls State to Legionville Safety Patrol Camp to baseball. Please visit your local post and find out what the American Legion does in your community. Please join us in continuing to serve America. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll hear the compelling story of a former homeless veteran. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is continually looking for qualified employees who want to work with our team. One person alone can't accomplish our mission. When you join the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, you are joining a team that is committed to helping serve Minnesota veterans and their families. Whether you are a veteran, family member, or an individual, you can make a difference today by supporting our nation's heroes. We have full-time and part-time positions throughout Minnesota in both the Program and Services and Veterans Homes Division. To find current opportunities at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, visit the Minnesota Management and Budget website and create an online resume today. MDVA is committed to the policy of equal employment opportunity and maintains an affirmative action program.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Doran Hocker, who is a retired case manager from MACV, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and volunteers for MACV now. Doran, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be here.
Doran, you and I met out at the last stand down at the Boy Scout camp here in Minneapolis when you had so many homeless veterans in and were taking care of them. That was quite a day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I met a lot of veterans out there for many different reasons, and I was glad to be of some service to them as well.
And there was all kinds of resources available for them
that day. Yes, it was. And it's many more available. We're still trying to reach a lot of veterans who are in need of services out there. And if possible, just give us a call. We can help you out. If we can't, then we know some of the people who can.
I saw veterans leaving with winter boots and backpacks full of clothes and food and clean underwear and all kinds of stuff. They were just they were having a good day, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. All that was temporary, though. There are other services that were available to them as well: income, employment, Social Security, health care, and dental care, and all types of services for them. And that's the ones we try to help.
Doran, there are a lot of good people and a lot of good organizations out there helping to fight veteran homelessness. But today we want to talk about your story because it's personal to you. You've been there and you've done it.
Okay.
But can you share with us, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and I had aspirations of always going into the Air Force. My father was in the Army Air Corps, and I used to play with his uniform and his medals as a kid. And I would say, one day I'm going to be just like my dad. And I grew up, and I went to high school, and I had aspirations going to college. But at that time, when I was in school, they still had the draft. So as soon as I graduated high school and just before I went to college, I got my draft notice that said, greetings, one at that time that all the guys dreaded. So I enrolled in the delayed enlistment program for the Air Force. I was supposed to go in the Army in May, I believe. I went in April 1st, April Fool's Day into the Air Force. And from there, I trained at Lackland. And then I had my first station in Florida. And at that time, I was on PC permanent duty there.
This was back in 1971.
Yeah, 71, when the Vietnam War was still, it was winding down then. So I was on temporary duty, and I went to a lot of places in Southeast Asia, Thailand. And my next PCS station was in Kroonsan, Korea. At that time I went there, the country was under martial law, and it was just chaotic all over the place. And all the things that I saw over there, I walked in a blast. And it disoriented me completely. I never thought that I had a TBI. But when I came back to the United States, I was completely disoriented. I wasn't able to...
TBI is traumatic brain injury.
Yes, mm-hmm. Traumatic brain injury. I wasn't able to reintegrate too much back into civilian life. When I come back, I started taking sleeping meds so I can go to sleep at night. That didn't work. Then I started drinking. And I started drinking heavily to the point where I'd pass out. But the bad thing about passing out, I kept going on. I would black out and find myself waking up like 20, 30 miles away, not realizing or knowing anything that I had done. So I went to the VA for some counseling in Battle Creek, Michigan. They put me in a program there where they would watch me for a while, and then they put me on some psychotropic drugs. I started having bad reactions with that when I got out. That didn't seem to work either. So I started self-medicating using street drugs and more alcohol. That just turned my life into a downward spiral that I couldn't recover from. Things kept getting worse. I was living on the street. I had lost my home. I had lost my wife, lost contact with my children, and it was just a horrible life. I began to live in abandoned buildings. I lived under driveways, the freeway, or just out in the park on benches. Anywhere that I could.
We're speaking with Doran Hocker on Minnesota Military Radio and learning the story of how he went off to the service, experienced some things in Vietnam and Korea, and came home and had some trouble from that and ended up being a homeless person. And Doran, things spiraled down. You said you lost your house, your wife, your job. You were living on the streets. Tell us about living on the streets. That's got to be rough.
Yeah, that's very rough. A lot of people feel sheltered in their homes, and they have no idea what the street life is. Let me give you paint a picture of what a lot of guys see on the streets. Those that aren't right in the mind, it could be just mental issues or drugs, alcohol, but you see a lot of violence with people who don't know any better. You've got to fight, literally, for your clothes, for your food, and for your respect. A major thing that with people who are living on the street is respect. You got to earn it. And how they do that is with violence. They feed off the misery and despair of others. And you can easily see someone, what they would call hitting a lick. What that means is that they can manipulate someone to get whatever it is that they have. And the response for that is most likely always violent. One of the things that you can find on the street more so, easier than anything you might think, are weapons. You can find a gun quicker than you can find a hot dog. It's really that easy. There are warrants on their people's arrest. They're under the radar. They don't care anything about you. There's no love. There's no honor among thieves, so to speak. It's just take, take, and take. You will see children sold into prostitution for drugs. I've seen mothers with 4 and 5 year old girls, line them up against the wall to be sold for $1 $5 rock. They also do the same thing. They trade sex for money, food, anything like that. I saw one girl who came up, was going to work, temp job, because that's what most homeless people do if they're lucky enough to get one. She came up to us and said she would have sex with us for the sandwich. Later on that night, she was found in a park with the head bashed in. These are the everyday things that you see in the street when you're homeless. And a lot of people don't suspect that. When you sit home and you can watch, you know, TV and have a home-cooked meal and see your children laughing and be with the ones that you love, this is the things that go on all the time. You don't see them, but they really do exist. And a lot of people don't understand this. And one of the things for about veterans, they were put in a situation where that these things were day-to-day for them. A veteran goes to combat or sees some things that you would never think happen or view. Veterans see these kind of things day in and day out when they're shooting weapons and they're thinking about where those bullets go. You don't think about that. It's not like a John Wayne movie where it's that you walk in there and say, okay, Pilgrim, put them up and you can duck and dodge those bullets. Those things move too quickly. And when you're in a blast, they don't show on the movie screen the concussion that you're going to feel with that and that the ringing in your ears and those kind of things. These veterans go through that. When they come back here, they're wondering, what have I done this for? Who do I do this for? Why did I do it? Those kind of things run through a veteran's mind. And when they're sitting back and they have to fight for the same things that they fought for overseas, it disorients them. They come back to a loving family, but they're not the same person. That's what happened to me. I came back, I had seen things that just completely changed my mind. When I started speaking with my wife, she didn't understand. When I came back, my daughter had just been born, and I remember looking at her for the first time, and the first thing that went through my mind was watching a baby around the same age, newborn, froze to death. How do you deal with something like that? I started getting counseling at the VA hospital in Battle Creek, and one of the things that I learned, this was sometime later after I got out, but the reason I had been going through the drugs and the alcohol and things like this, I had been trying to kill myself slowly for all this time for the things that were inside of me. And coming out of it, I had to learn how to deal with those demons that were put inside of me, the things that I had seen, watching people killed, starved, just to survive. Not like we do here, but when it came back and I was in a homeless situation, I saw the same things.
We're speaking with Doran Hocker about his experience as a homeless person for many, many years on Minnesota Military Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk to him further about how he got off the streets and back into some semblance of life. Please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Doran Hocker, who is a retired case manager from the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans and now volunteers with them, about the time when he went into the service, saw some things, suffered from some PTSD and traumatic brain injury, and found himself in a downward spiral and became homeless. And Doran, you weren't homeless for just a day or a week or a month. You were homeless for years.
Yes, that's right, Tom. Once I had come back from overseas, that's when it had started. And I was living, I'd got my first apartment. I lost that due to drinking and I couldn't keep a job. Then I started living with friends and family before I was living on the street. This was for a few years. But then because of my lifestyle, I could no longer stay with my loved ones. They didn't understand what had happened to me. At that time, I didn't either. Once I started going out on the street, I begin to have camaraderie, not with the people I did like when I went in basic training, how close we got then, but the common factor between the people I was with this time became drugs and alcohol. That was the main thread that we had with each other. That began to get out of control, and then that's when it just led, okay, it's a dog-eat-dog world. I began to lose everything that I had. I went into a level of depression where my self-esteem, everything had just gone. My appearance, my physical appearance was going down. As that went down, then my level of confidence also went down. You could no longer find a job. Your friends were all not the ones that you really want to take home to meet your parents. After I started living in the street, I was able to get into the vet center in Detroit. That's when I started realizing this has got to change. I didn't get it at first, but I couldn't help myself because the one thing someone had told me, and it didn't make sense to me at the time. He said, why do you want to stay here and not pay any money? I was at the vet center there. And I said, because I'm trying to save up. That was my lying to myself, trying to keep my habit going. And I asked him, well, why would you want me to? He says, because you can. I didn't understand it then, but that was the hope, a seed of hope that was put in me. I didn't know that I could actually do anything. I was feeding off other people. You know, not standing on my own, relying on this handout or this one. That's what I was saying before, hitting the lick, getting something for nothing, so to speak. But I was losing my self-esteem all the entire time.
So you had bottomed out.
Yeah.
On the streets, chasing your habit, totally vulnerable. and hanging out with some other veterans that had similar problems because there was some commonality as a veteran.
Yeah.
And this went on for 3 decades.
Correct.
Doran, I can't, it's hard for me to fathom, but it was explained to me one day in terms of a door. When you're homeless, you don't have a door. You don't have a room. You don't have a house. You don't have a door. Totally vulnerable. There's no sanctuary other than go to the VA, other than maybe a homeless shelter. But you're down, out, and to some degree not able to help yourself. But you found a way. Who helped you come back?
People speaking to me. They put seeds in you. That's one of the things I do now. Give them that hope. Like when I just said, the guy said, because you can. That was something. It never occurred to me. I can do something. I'm better than what I think I am. The veterans and people who are out there homeless now, they need someone to let them know you can do that. You can do it. Anything that you want, you just got to put your mind to it. One day, it just, someone told me, okay, well, what is it that you want? Write it down. I wrote down 21 things that I wanted to do, simple little things. I wanted a bank account. I wanted to see my daughter again. It had been 30 years. I wanted to cook in my own kitchen. I wanted to drive a car again. Things that most people take for granted, but I wrote them down.
And you wanted a door.
Yeah. So you know what happened? You know what that door was? It opened up and I left. I had a way to get out of it. I was sitting there in my cousin's apartment and I looked around and I saw on the couch the drug dealer. I saw in there murderers, thieves, panhandlers, dope men, prostitutes. And I looked around and said, this isn't me. I can't take this anymore. My eyes were open and I saw the door. I said, okay. I went up to my cousin and said, this is it. Let's just leave. He said, okay, yeah, as soon as I finish this and do all this other stuff. And I'm just looking around, people going around. I'm watching guns on the floor, guns on the bed. And I said, no, I'm leaving. Come with me. Just leave all this. He said, sure, okay. So I just got up and I walked out. I turned around and saw the door and I left out. I called my brother and I said, I want to come and stay with you for a minute. I can't take this anymore. I just need a rest. But something was inside of me and just knew. After speaking with a lot of people saying, just do this, it didn't register in my mind. Like you said, that door that opened up, there's a spiritual door that awakens in you and you go through it. It's hard to explain, but when you've had, you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, that's an expression that a lot of people in recovery use. You got to know when that is. You got to be sick and tired of being sick and tired and step out on faith. I didn't know what I was going to do, where I was going to go, so I just left. When I got to St. Paul, my brother was in a similar situation. I couldn't take it, so I just got up one day and something told me to start walking. I walked to the Dorothy Day Center and met a man, one of the nurses from the VA hospital in Minneapolis. He said, are you really serious about changing your life? I said, yeah. He said, come and see me tomorrow. When I went to see him, he had a ticket for me to go to St. Cloud. I went up there to go to treatment. And I remember going into our counseling session that next day, and I was put in the hot seat. And they said, why are you here? And everyone was expecting me to say, I want to stop drinking. I want to stop using drugs and these kind of things. I said, no, that's not why I'm here. And they looked at me and said, well, why are you here? Because I want to know now what. I've been doing all these things, living my life in adverse conditions, trying to destroy myself for so many years, I had totally forgotten what it's like to live as a human being. I remember one of the guys had got upset and he walked out because he was so angry, like that's messing with his sobriety or something like this. I said, no, I stopped before I came to that door. Now what? That had been instilled with me. And I really meant it at that time because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. When I left there, I was tested many times. I came to MACV and I was in a cell house there and they had put me in a cell house and I was at home by myself and I'd been saving up because I wasn't spending anything doing that again. And I had $1,000 in my pocket, home to myself, and there was a knock at the door and a woman came to the door and said, oh yeah, we used to party. And I just looked at her and said, oh, is that right? And instead of letting her in, I said, you got to go. And that's when I realized I had the strength inside of me to do it.
Do you find that these veterans, do they trust you? Do they react to you better because you've been there and done it?
Most of them usually do. Like I said, it's a process of willing and wanting it. When you really want it, then you listen.
Sounds like they can't fool you very well, and they can't hide the problem because you've been there and you understand them.
Yeah, I understand what they're going through. I know what was that phrase? You can't outslick a can of oil. So,
been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you let them go. You make yourself available for them whenever they want to. Okay, we can help them for a while. That's what I used to do.
Help show them the way.
Yeah, help show them the way. Now, these things they do first, okay, that get them stable first. But then it's imperative that you give them the hope they need that they can do this. If they don't think they can, it's just going to be a revolving door of assistance over and over again. And what I'm doing, I'm still there. I did retire, but I really do want to work myself out of a job.
Darn, it sounds like you've really enjoyed yourself the last 8-10 years helping other veterans.
I do. I love each one of them is worth it. I love my veterans because I still believe that any person that puts on a uniform and says they'll die for this country, that's a person worth noticing. But when they actually do it, that's a person who deserves all the respect and help I can give them. These are persons who we all relied on at one point. Now when they need some help, okay, let's build them back up.
Dorn, we started the show by talking about the fact that I met you out at the stand down that the MACV put on out at the Boy Scout base camp. And I don't think I have adequate words to tell everybody the look that you had on your face when that stand down was going on and all those veterans were coming through getting help, getting clothes, food, and winter boots. You were really smiling and you were happy about that day.
Yeah. I want to get these guys a better life than what they have there coming in to stand down. I always look at them and I'm saying to myself, whatever it was that brought you through that door, I hope it never happens to you again when you walk out and your life is much better. And I think that's what we all should do. The old phrase is, am I my brother's keeper? I believe I am.
Dorn, thank you. I'm glad you're stable. I'm glad you're helping other veterans. And I'm happy that you joined us today to share your story.
Thank you, Tom. It's my pleasure.
It was Dorn Hocker, who now is a retired case manager from MACV, talking about his time as a homeless veteran and now the last decade or so helping other veterans to end homelessness on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Joanna Baldwin Mallory, Carl Marlantis, Dorn Hocker, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we see what Blue Cross and Blue Shield is doing for our veterans and check out the Medal of Honor program. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.